Okay, just for the record, Paige Lawrence, Vice Chair, Matt Ulakaya, and Akram are not here. I believe Paige indicated she would not be here today. I've not heard from Matt, and Akram is on his way.
Okay.
Just for the record.
First item on the agenda is a public comment, but seeing no members of the public, anyone on the committee wish to bring anything to the board or the commission, committee? Yep. Seeing none, we'll move on to discussion items, approval of the minutes from last month's meeting.
I believe I sent those out. If I didn't, I think I sent them out with the notice. If I didn't, I'll resend them.
Would you like to table those to next month's for a review?
Sure.
So we'll bring that back to next month's meeting. Okay, on to business items. First item on the agenda, Mr. Steve, a general plan update.
Yeah, we have the consultant, and he is up in the Bay Area, so in an interest of saving money, we'll do what we did with the CDC. I'm going to get him on the phone, and he will walk us through. There's a memo that he was distributed here, but he will walk us through. My apologies to the mayor, who's already heard this.
That's fine.
You want to wait for the two members to be here so they can also listen to the general plan, just table it to the next time?
Well, he'll walk us through. I don't think they'll get a copy.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, this is John.
John, Steve Franks and the Infrastructure Management Advisory Committee here.
Hi.
Hello.
Chair is Leah Kabara.
Hello.
Good morning.
And why don't we all just introduce ourselves so he knows who's in the room. Steve Franks.
Yeah, Dave Moritz.
Bob Colacott.
Bill Kabara.
And Leah Kabara.
Great. Good morning, everyone.
John, they have a copy of your memo as well.
Okay.
So if you want to walk everyone through what we're...
Sure. There have been a few laws and other things that have been adopted by the state in recent years. And so as a result of those new laws, cities are required to update their general plans for some technical things. The main takeaway here is that this is mainly a technical requirement. It doesn't, it probably doesn't require any change in policy or development regulations on the part of the city. But the two most important things that I think are in this package are that the city's general plan needs to be updated to show the most recent fire hazard zones and flood hazard zones. So that's what we propose to do is get copies of the most recent maps showing those hazard zones and make sure that they're reflected in the general plan. There's some other things that are procedural requirements, such as consulting with Native American tribes and so forth. But I think in terms of the substance of this, it's mainly updating the general plan to show those fire and flood hazard zones.
Okay, and John, could you just, the time frame that this is all due and how this connects to the housing element?
Yeah, one of the laws that was passed uses the housing element schedule as a trigger for when these amendments are supposed to be adopted. And so we are right now about halfway through the 8-year housing element cycle. State law requires that the housing element of the general plan be updated every 8 years. So the last due date was in 2013, and the next one is in 2021. So we're midway through the cycle. So these things they're required to be done now as soon as possible, and then we'll be required to look at the information again in 2021 to see if there's any changes that need to be incorporated into the other elements of the general plan.
And John, you want to talk? You and I talked about the other day the issue of RENA and all those things that are happening right now. So we sort of have to start work, and I think the mayor's talked about this before, start work on the housing element update now as opposed to later?
Yes, and in a nutshell, to keep it as short as possible, state housing element law requires every city to zone enough land to accommodate its housing growth needs at different income levels. And the most important concern for most cities is that in order to show that you have enough land zoned for low income, you have to have density levels that are high enough according to state standards. And for small cities like Villa Park, that density is 20 units per acre, which is typically a 2 to 3 story apartment building. And so Villa Park is a small city. It's nearly built out, but every city has a requirement to plan for growth. So in the last housing element cycle, Villa Park had to adopt some zoning changes to show that high-density housing could be built in the city. And so there were some zoning changes adopted for the two parcels at the northeast corner of the town center, the parcels where City Hall and the adjacent office building sits. And that those zoning changes allowed multifamily and mixed-use development. But, of course, they are fully developed, and so it's unlikely that any new development is going to happen there, particularly on City Hall property because it's publicly owned. So what's happening right now is SCAG, the Southern California Association of Governments, at the beginning of each update cycle for the housing element, they go through a growth forecast update process that's used for transportation planning and also for housing planning. So they've started that process now, and then once the new growth forecast is finalized, then each city will be assigned housing growth numbers that they have to compare their zoning to show that the zoning could accommodate the amount of housing growth that they've been assigned through that forecast process. So what the city needs to do is closely monitor and participate in that growth forecast process. In Orange County, there's a group at Cal State Fullerton called the Center for Demographic Research that acts as a liaison between the cities and Orange County and SCAG, the regional planning agency. So that process is going on right now. And so it's important for the city to participate in that to make sure that the growth forecast numbers are reasonable.
John, the city's population, as I recall, has actually declined a bit over the past several years. Given that, how would this growth forecast affect us?
Yeah, that's a good point. The growth forecast looks at broader population trends, you know, national and state population trends, but then it also looks at the micro-level land use patterns. And so one of the most important drivers in this process is vacant land or land that is ripe for redevelopment. So Villa Park doesn't have a lot of developable parcels left because it's nearly built out. So what's most important for the city is to make sure that the folks that are doing the growth forecast understand how little land there is left for development in Villa Park. Mm-hmm. And that in combination with the population decline, you know, the population decline is mostly because there are fewer people living in each house on average. You know, kids grow up, they move out, and
yeah,
empty nesters and so forth.
Yeah. An aging population.
Yeah, so the main thing is to make sure that the regional planners appreciate the land use and the properties, the very few properties that are available for development. And so, you know, the idea is the places that have the most capacity should get the highest forecast numbers. So, you know, places like, even Irvine is, years ago, Irvine had a lot of development happening. That's slowing down because Irvine is, you know, getting getting fewer and fewer parcels available for development. But the idea, the big picture here with this round of growth forecast is there's a trend at the state level to steer development into areas where mass transit is available. So along major bus lines and rail, commuter rail lines and things like that. So what I expect to see in this next forecast is the areas that have more density and more transit available, they're the ones that are going to get the highest growth forecast. So in Orange County, you'd see places like Santa Ana and parts of Anaheim and Irvine and so forth, where I think most of the growth is going to go. But Villa Park just needs to participate actively in that process to make sure that something doesn't happen where, you know, the regional planners see some vacant land on the map and plop down 100 multifamily housing units there in the forecast.
Okay. Actually, I think the population forecasting is in land use planning is a little bit beyond this committee. We're our infrastructure committee. But how do we? How does the city participate in this?
Well, I can. We are actually, as we speak, we're signing a contract to get John actively representing us.
Okay.
Wiscag, who has the most knowledge of this and representation.
Okay.
So John, for a pittance. Right, John?
Yes.
For $3,500, he's going to basically represent us and go through this process and be able to make sure our interests are represented.
Okay.
And appropriately doing, because I think, John, if anyone has the knowledge and expertise to be able to debate with the planners, I think John would mm-hmm. be the guy. So we are in the process of getting an agreement in place. Correct, John?
Yes.
So, what percent built out would we say the city is? Got to be close to 100%, doesn't it?
Yeah, when we updated the housing element a couple of years ago, we did a survey of vacant parcels, and I don't have it in front of me, but my recollection is that there were only maybe 20 or so vacant lots. Does that sound right to you, Steve or Bob?
It sounds high.
It might be a little high, yeah. But you know, I can count maybe five in my mind, but. Five or six.
But whether there was five or six or 20, wouldn't those already be zoned for, you know, at their current zoning, which is, what is it, small estate, or what they call half-acre lots? I mean, you'd have to rezone to yeah. fit in high-density housing in those lots.
Yeah, and that's
and
what
it's infill inside of our neighborhood, so.
That's what we did a couple of years ago, is rezoned where we're sitting as mixed-use commercial and residential.
Okay.
High-density residential, so.
So the complicating factor, John, why don't you tell them, is how it's got to reasonably have a chance of being developed. And like you say, it doesn't have a chance for, you know, City Hall is not planned to be moved, and maybe it is, I don't know. But the office building is certainly out of our hands, but it doesn't appear that they want to, you know, demolish that. They're looking to, you know, rent it and do all those things. So I don't know that those are going to work, maybe not. I don't
yeah.
think so.
And that was my strategy in proposing that that alternative a couple of years ago, is that, okay, we have to have areas zoned for high density. Okay, we'll put it someplace where it can't be built.
Yeah.
And we no sooner adopted that housing element than the state laws regarding the high density zoning changed and said, okay, now you've got to provide it in a place where there's a likelihood that things will be built. So we're back to the drawing board.
I just would want to make sure that, you know, if there's an infill lot, if there's a vacant lot in one of our neighborhoods here, that wouldn't be rezoned for high density right in the middle of a neighborhood. Is that something that could be
I mean,
forces
right
to
now, the council controls that. I mean, and uh-huh. There's certainly no desire nor motivation to move yeah. in that direction.
Okay.
You know, the question is, what does the state say to satisfactorily meet the housing element? And
yeah.
That's sort of the dilemma that is going to be facing us in the next 3 years.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
And, John, it's my understanding that if the city doesn't comply with the zoning, then the state can step in and say, okay, well, we're going to rezone for you.
It's not so much that the state steps in. It's the result of third-party litigation. So, give you an example. About 10 or so years ago, the city of Mission Viejo got caught up in this issue, and they were sued by Legal Aid Society. So that lawsuit ran its course, and the state weighs in by expressing their opinion as to whether the city complies with state law or not. So the state weighs in and says, we don't think Mission Viejo complies with state law, and then a third party sues the city, and then it works its way through the process. The result of that was that Mission Viejo had to rezone several properties for high density under court order. So that's kind of the, you know, the worst case scenario. I don't want to hijack this meeting into talking about the housing element, but the laws got a whole lot tougher last year with a raft of bills that got approved by the state legislature. And the common criticism is that the state takes a one-size-fits-all approach to affordable housing. And state law says basically whatever your growth forecast is for housing, 40% of that needs to be high density. It's pretty much a blanket requirement across the state. And it hits cities like Villa Park especially hard because, you know, Villa Park is a low-density rural suburban type community, and there's a handful of cities around the state that are like that. I remember a few years ago I worked with a community called Hidden Hills up in the San Fernando Valley near Agoura Hills and out in that area, and they were very much like Villa Park, low density estate type lots, and they had basically one or two parcels in the community that were zoned for commercial, kind of like Villa Park does. And so there wasn't a lot of options for them. They had to zone those commercial properties to allow high-density housing or mixed use. So that's the issue. You know, if Villa Park has, you know, 10 or 15 single-family lots available and the state allocates a growth of, let's say, you know, 15 housing units, 40% of those have to be high density, and that means the state's going to come down and say, okay, well, you need to show that you have multifamily zoning to accommodate, you know, whatever five units or whatever that, whatever 40% of that number is. So that's where the crunch comes.
So what that kind of assumes that your population's going to grow, but if we assume that our population is going to remain stagnant, does that mean that, you know, 40% of zero is still zero?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been working with this stuff for a long time, and the smallest growth allocation I've seen is two units. And I worked with several cities to get it down to two, and that's they give every city at least two. So the best case in this next growth forecast is Villa Park's allocation is two housing units. Then what the state's going to say is, okay, well, 40% of two is, you know, is something. Where are you going to allow? They require every city to have some place where high density can be built. Now, there's a city called, now I'm blanking out on it, but there's a city in the hills east of Pasadena. It'll occur to me in a minute. But they were another city that's kind of like Villa Park, and so they negotiated a not a court settlement, but a policy settlement with the state where they would allow additional units, like accessory units on large lots, but with more relaxed standards than the typical accessory unit regulations. So, you know, you take this one step at a time. First, you try to make sure that the growth forecast is as low as possible, and then, you know, once the hand of cards is dealt to you through that growth forecast, then you figure out, okay, what's the best way to accommodate this? Accessory unit, one of the strategies that we're using is, you know, the city updated its accessory unit regulations just recently. And so state law allows cities to use accessory units that are expected to be built in the future to satisfy a portion of their high-density housing growth forecast. But it has to be based on the number of accessory units that have been approved in the past. So they assume that, you know, what's been happening in the past is the best predictor of what's going to happen in the future. So that's one of the reasons why for cities like Villa Park, it's good to encourage accessory units, because then you can use that data to argue with the state that creates capacity to satisfy your high-density housing requirements.
Well, to focus this, the remaining part of this discussion on the infrastructure management, I think the component that's going to most affect or be affected by our group is the flood hazard.
Yes.
Where do you see that going? I mean, I suppose we're supposed to identify areas of like flood hazard and then develop programs to try to address that, or strategies?
Well, the city, this is not really new. The only thing that's new here is that the city has to update the maps on a regular basis in the general plan. But the regulations that apply to flood hazard zones are in place now. FEMA regulations and the building codes require various things if you're in or near a flood hazard zone. And if you look at a map of the flood hazard zones, there's only some small portions of Villa Park that are affected. You got the property along San Diego Creek, of course, on the southeastern side of the city. And then there's also, strangely enough, there's some flood hazard zones just right there east of City Hall along San Diego. Probably about half of Villa Park High School is in a flood hazard zone, and then some of the residential properties to the east. And then the middle school along Serrano, there's a narrow strip of flood hazard zone that also has some residential properties in it. But the building codes contain regulations, you know, requiring if you're in a flood hazard zone, you have to elevate your foundation above the flood projected flood level and so forth. So it's not really a change. This is not going to require a change in city policy or regulations. Those are already on the books. It's just updating the mapping information so that, you know, people can see what the current data is.
Yeah, my recollection from reviewing the 2010 general plan, which is our current general plan, it did not identify the flood hazards or the fire hazards. So I guess that's something we need to import into this the update, correct?
Right. I mean, those maps are available. You know, the building official and the inspectors have those maps, but the law just says you have to make sure that they're printed in the general plan too,
right,
so that, you know, people can look it up and see it without having to come into City Hall.
Okay, but the requirements to develop the general plan doesn't mean that, okay, you've identified the hazards, now you need to go further to develop strategies to mitigate those hazards outside of the
change, because those policies and regulations are already on the books. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the general plan and the building codes already specify what needs to be done if you're in or adjacent to a flood hazard zone.
One last question, or a couple questions for me. This is Leah, John. So you don't anticipate, or you haven't seen identified any riparian habitat, existing riparian habitat issues as far as this city is concerned?
I haven't looked at that because it's not part of this this project. Yes, you do have riparian habitat along stream channels often, mm-hmm, but it's not specifically within the scope of this update. All we're required to do is have maps that show where those flood hazard zones are.
Okay. Well, according to that, I was looking at page 1 at the bottom there for the AB 162, It does mm-hmm. say that the element to identify rivers, creeks, streams, flood corridors, riparian habitat, and I don't have page two, but so as a part of your analysis and your mapping, you would have to, in order to comply with AB 162, you would have to identify any elements that show up as far as riparian habitat.
You know, we'll take a closer look at that as we get into it. I wasn't assuming that we had to do any biological habitat mapping as part of this.
Right. But I imagine it would already, you would think it would already be identified for the at least the creek bed area, right? Because I know that the City of Orange was at one time looking at restoring some habitat in the lower Santiago Creek area mm-hmm. near Grijalva Park. So I didn't know if that was already identified on some mapping source somewhere, and that could be imported or included in our, as a part of that AB 162 included in our general plan update. Just because it's such a big deal now, you know, for anything that goes on along the creek beds, bike trails or anything.
Yeah, we'll make sure that we take a close look at that and see if there's anything else that I was not assuming that we needed to do.
Okay, would be good.
Yeah, there's probably riparian habitat along was it Canyon Creek above the collapsed storm drain.
I'm sure there would be, yeah.
There's always water in it, so.
Right. One other question. In regards to the climate change adaption, could you just briefly tell us how you intend to address that portion of the SB 379 issue?
Yeah, and you know, for small cities like Villa Park, a lot of information is already out there that can be borrowed from. And the county and the fire authority periodically they prepare a hazard mitigation plan. And so that's a pretty lengthy document that has a lot of information, and when you look at the climate change, what you're focusing on is okay. What are the threats and various kinds of things that are likely to affect the city? So the things that they project are more intense storms, so that could affect the floodplain levels, flood hazard zones, longer fire season, more intense fires, and so forth. And so that translates into fire hazard planning, as well as some other things. So, for small cities, the idea is to try not to reinvent the wheel and to incorporate what others have already done to the greatest extent possible. So what I would suggest, with regard to this SB 379, and by the way, that's no changes are required right now. They will be required in the future because it's triggered by an update to the local hazard mitigation plan. So the next time the county and the fire authority update that plan, then that will trigger the need for Villa Park to take a look at the general plan.
So resiliency strategies are, you don't have to look at like counting the number of people that have gone solar in the city or what the city, you know, forcing the city to have any sort of requirements that have to do with resiliency strategies, whatever those are, in regards to climate change.
And again, I would say to the extent that other jurisdictions and other plans incorporate recommendations and policies, then the city, I would suggest look at those and incorporate the things that make sense. So the hazard mitigation plan that the county and the fire authority do discuss those kinds of things. And so what we would do is look at that plan, see what parts of it, if they're required by some state law or regulation, then you know we put it in because we have to. If it's not required, but if it's advisory, then we look to see which of these things make sense for Villa Park, and the ones that do, then we pull those into the general plan.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for John?
Thank you, John. I'll be in touch on the agreement. We're good to go. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that I appreciate everyone's willingness to do that telephonically because it saves us some visit time.
You bet.
And I think it's productive with staff. So thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on the general plan? And when is that supposed to be completed, the update?
We just lost John on the phone. He told us last time, and I forget the date.
I thought it was 2021, but
the
whole general plan.
No, but I think they told us they need to bring the update, and he told us that this I'll have to check. He told us.
Yeah.
And he said. Him. I don't remember. I apologize.
Okay.
We're 30 seconds too late.
But it has to be updated by 2021 in general.
Definitely by 2021. Okay. That's the housing element, 2021. But then I think the general plan has an element that has to be updated now.
From what I heard, he said he has to update it right away and then look at it
in 2021
to see if there are changes.
So I think the fire hazard and the flood hazard and those things have to be addressed now, because when HCD contacted us when we submitted our housing element update and said, Gret's great, now you got to bring your general plan back up to date with that. So I think that's due, but I don't. He told us even a month, and I'm just, my age is catching up with me about this.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah. All right. Seeing no other discussion or comments on the general plan, let's move on to the street rehab project update and discussion status.
The street rehab, we already have a contractor on board, and they've already started their survey and tying all the survey points on all the streets. And they should be, actual work will be starting the day after Labor Day.
Is the contractor?
RJ Noble. And it would be about approximately 45 working days to be done. So that's already moving. And
construction.
The construction is, we should be the city council next meeting onward engineering.
Construction management, that's on the agenda for this coming meeting, which is the 28th.
And they're already, I already have a discussion with them and so on. So they already have the plans and ready to start as soon as the agreement is signed.
And what is their contract? They'll be on the job whenever the contractor's on the job, or they show up once a day?
No, there is a full-time inspector.
Full-time. Okay.
And then a part-time project
manager.
Few hours a day.
So you're out of it completely.
Yeah, well, since I'm here only 2 days a week, and it's very hard to be able to inspect, but still, I'll be in charge of the project, making sure that everything is running
properly. But our contractors are complying.
Yeah.
So, of course, they'll be doing daily reports and submitting those to you, and along with the quantities and estimates. Okay.
And if there's any issues, we'll take care of them out in the field or in the office. All right?
Okay.
This is the update. Matter of fact, let me just update also the sewer project on that. We already have a contractor which has started and working. It's Ramona Inc., and they've already now replacing a pipe on Fernando, and there are several locations that they will be working on. Some of them are spot repair and relining. The relining will occur the last part of the project. This way all the spot repairs are completely done and taken care of before the relining is done.
How long
The project is also about 45
days.
We already have a inspector in the field and a project manager on that too.
And who is that?
That's NV5, civil source on that project. The There are a couple of projects, a couple of streets that they're common, or they're going to be repaved by the street by RJ Noble. So the sewer contractor will be basing it to the top, and then RJ Noble will come in and grind and do the final cap. So this way we're not doing both by two different contractors on that.
Okay. When will we have the schedule by street?
Okay. The schedule by streets, we'll since we've asked him to do additional work as part of the maintenance, so they're adding it, and we'll have that just sometimes next week, the detailed schedule.
Okay. I've asked them to do door-to-door as well, yes. So that the residents would all be notified
in
advance. So we effectively have 2.5 weeks before they start work. So if we receive it next week, and I've been pushing Akram for the schedule.
Yeah. And what extra work have they been asked to do?
This is the additional crack and
R&R, some spot potholes, crack sealing.
Yeah, we did a...
On the same streets or outside?
No, outside, besides the project list.
So the mayor had brought this up and suggested that we do some additional work, so maybe you want to...
Well, actually, we had it was budgeted last year, the year before, too, rather than just do... Previously, all we did was major street rehabs. Now we're going in and we're fixing structural defects, like when you've got an area that's alligated, we're pulling that out, fixing it, and patching it. So that this structural failure doesn't spread.
So we did a change order to the contract, and the council approved that. So we have that effort going forward as part of the.
But on separate streets outside
okay. From the.
Yes, that was the whole point. Is that we could get a lot more bang for our buck and go further.
Yeah. So, for example, Dodson Street. Over on kind of across from Sierra Villa, it's got cracks all over it. It's got a lot of subsidence and areas with it's alligatored, but that street's not scheduled for total repair, so this will get it by and keep things from deteriorating further until we can get back and totally rehabilitate that street.
That's smart.
Yeah.
How much extra are we paying for the maintenance?
$40,000
with more
on
to be
allocated.
The original
contract was how much?
It's it's about $700,000. Yeah.
$700,000 total. Yeah. Okay, and we have budgeted $900,000 for this year.
So. Yes. Yeah.
So there'll be more work coming back, and that's sort of the next phase we talked about. There may also be savings we're identifying elsewhere in the budget that we could potentially use to additionally address it. So we're kind of moving forward on the Mesa Henderson storm drain, for instance, came in under bid, as you recall. So to the extent that that actually stays under bid and we do it, we have some monies that we can redirect over that will be well suited. And I believe that's going to be our recommendation to the council, and that will be in the fall, but you'll be seeing that coming forward.
So Dodson, you said, was pretty torn up, and it was actually identified as a PCI index of category as good, which is even above fair.
But it's not.
But if you go and look at the street, there are areas where there's structural failures. So the idea is to fix those, not rehabilitate the entire street, just fix and patch to... keep the street in one piece until it does come up for restoration.
It's good, then. It doesn't sound like it's good.
The problem is that when we're trying to identify the next round of street rehab, we can go through and mark what obviously they've identified as poor, supposedly budgeted for as poor, and then all of a sudden. We know either through word of mouth or driving it ourselves, because this is a purely subjective study.
And plus it's taking, the whole street rather than a few spots. Okay, And I mean,
no, but there's rules for like percentages, right? There's a whole set of criteria and rules. And if somebody hasn't looked at it carefully, that's when problems occur where, oh my goodness, this is not really a good street. It's actually a terrible street. Maybe they didn't look at it. Maybe they didn't look at it carefully. Or it can't have deteriorated in 1 year.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
that, obviously, right?
It's like, may I say something about Dobson? It's not really deteriorated as the whole street. There are a few spots that it's more of, I'm not going to call them as a potholes, but more of there are bad spots that is, you know, SARS, you know, some alligator cracking and so on and all that, which could be removed and replaced. But does not reflect the whole street as a whole. So the maintenance that it is areas, small areas in different.
That's the intent, to go target areas versus
so
known, the whole street.
Known problem
spots
throughout the city.
We're actually inventorying those spots as we speak.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Picking those up so that we know and we target. So it's targeted intervention, I guess, is the best way to say it.
So who's inventorying that?
We are. Background. Yes.
Akram and we have an engineering tech that was here. Writing.
So basically, word good doesn't really apply. It should be maybe fair.
It's good if you're considering the whole street, but there will be like, I mean, depending
there is an
on
equation. You know that, and I know that.
Yes, they take good, samples.
Yeah, but good has to be with, you know, basically, when you say good, it's slurry sealed street.
Okay.
Fair, you could say, okay, we can do a little bit of R&R spot, spot that changes, maybe slurry, maybe combination of overlay. But good is like, you know, PCI of what, 85 and above?
No, it's 75. They use 75 and above.
Okay.
That's the OCTA, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think OCTA dictates the PCI. The PCI is by the U.S. Corps of Engineers, but,
but
that's
a
different one.
It is, but yes, I
when
agree
you
100
say,
with you 100%.
When you say good, it's basically just very safe. So maybe
with
maybe
some R&R in few locations, you know, it's
good.
Minor. Yes, yes.
So what is the slurry seal street?
Slurry, I mean, it's still
excellent.
Good is slurry seal for good. I mean, that's you apply it for that,
they
but
apply
it doesn't
it
mean
very good. They have
there is very good,
poor,
yeah,
fair, good, very good.
Yes.
So good really is supposed to be right under very good.
Yeah.
Which is.
And that's why it's 75
maybe we
and
have
above.
To slurry
yeah.
It. Really. Barely have to slurry
the,
seal a very
the
good
problem
street.
Is like you guys said, you know, there is R&R and these things will deteriorate over time, right? So basically when it says good, people that are looking at this are going to say, oh, okay, this is a good street, let's not look at it, we'll move on.
Here's the process that we do. You know, you got to remember when we start choosing for next year's projects, the first things we look at is, one thing, what are the underground utilities projects that it's going to be done in the next 2 years, okay? So we look at that and we look at then the streets and visit them. In addition to what's the PCI right in here, we're not going to take them, you know, as it is the final say-so. We go and visit the field, out in the field, and verify the conditions of it and how it's changed, or if it changed or not, or if it is 100% correct what the PCI it is. And we take it, if it is underground utilities, then when can we schedule
what you're saying,
the streets?
You know, what you're saying makes common sense,
yes.
But what I'm saying is, if you classify something as good, there's a lot of streets. And if you're going to go drive every street, there's no point of having this list. Because that's why you paid money for this list.
Okay.
So it would identify basically the streets that you want to not only identify the bad streets, you want to identify streets that have future problem areas.
Correct.
That you can basically band-aid and increase their lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
So instead
that is
of overlay, you have to go to reconstruction in 20 years.
Okay.
So, 10 years or 5 years.
So that is, what is the PCI? Let me, I apologize, I don't have it with me. What's the PCI on that Datsun? I mean, we will be glad to go and visit and
75.
See.
75.
75. Yeah. So 75 is right at the border between good and fair. Yeah. So it's not a,
this is,
you know, completely.
This is,
well, I'll be
today.
Pleased yeah. to walk Datsun,
you know,
with you guys.
So that is.
And it's hard, you know, hard to find stretches of Datsun that aren't elongated or cracked or subsidence. It's
and there's no way that except, street should have been identified as 70, good.
Yeah. No,
75.
Not at all.
So, okay, there.
I
it's, you definitely
know,
is.
I think
yeah,
I disagree on that because, but we, because we've done some repairs and patching on
who,
Datsun.
Who did your work
a couple of years?
Who did the writing?
It's a graphic
marker geospatial.
Yes.
Yeah, again, I'll be pleased to walk the street,
yeah.
And there's part of the issue with Datsun is the city installed a storm drain or a sewer down the length of it some years back, and there's inadequate compaction. So there's, you know, during the whole length, there was subsidence. Now, there was one resident that did come in and complain. Actually, he complained for 40 years. And finally, we went in a couple of years ago, and we did a patch in front of his house. But there's still the rest of the street. So
why wasn't that street done in this year's? You know, I mean.
Yeah, and there were.
Yeah, it's
there
one thing if
part
it's
of the, like where part of the patch happened. You know, there's a nice patch in front of the street, and right adjacent to the patch, there's a big area where there's alligatoring, and more subsidence. It's like, you know, there's.
Right, there's other issues going
yeah,
on there.
Granted, it's a balance between the budget that we have to work with and the amount of deterioration that's occurred. And one of the things I've been talking with Steve about for several months is getting our street or our maintenance guys involved with just doing crack filling, which is, you know, as I've read, is about as difficult as mowing your lawn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you fill it, you know, blow the non-compressibles out of the crack and fill it with rubberized asphalt, you know, it's not going to improve things, but what it will do is it'll reduce future deterioration so that, you know, in the future we reduce our expenditures for street maintenance. So hopefully
yeah.
we can get that put together.
We're kind of hitting on several fronts here. We're trying to do a lot, and a lot of it's catching up, candidly, I think. Is
a lot. Oh, yeah, we've never done crack sealing in the city. Mm-hmm. You'll only find a few little pieces. I don't know how those cracks got filled, but there's very few places in the city where we've got cracks that have ever been filled. There was crack filling on Feather Hill, but they filled it with water-soluble. They did a water-soluble slurry seal and a water. This is before Akram's got involved. They did a water-soluble slurry seal and water-soluble crack fill, so it's all washed away and blown into our houses. So
interesting.
So I guess what I'm taking from this is we probably need to visit a bunch of streets and randomly each person picks a sheet and then we mark off what we thought of this.
Yeah, I think we'll get your help.
Because then we can.
Because
really
for next year, there's, 12 streets or so that are identified as poor in this area, mm-hmm. or in this report. So those streets, I mean, in reality, they're just, if they're poor, it means they're probably the worst in the city, according to these people. So they should be addressed probably very, you know, first, really.
Yeah.
So, and that includes the James neighborhood and, you know, and these other areas. What was surprising that Martinique, which is a newer development, why is that falling apart now? It's identified as poor.
I've walked that one. That looks great.
That's what I was saying. It says Martinique Court from Mesa to East End. They identified that as a 58 and labeled it poor, and that's like a brand new development.
It is. And
so,
I was going to use that as an example of a really good street.
I just knew that it was a newer development.
Yeah.
There's no way that it could be in as bad a shape as maybe some of the ones that haven't been touched in 50 years. So why is it highlighted.
And how did they come up with that evaluation? Was it a visual inspection that this consultant did?
PCI is all visual inspection.
Yes.
Yeah, which means that maybe they didn't look at it, or they had an inexperienced person looking at it, or I don't know. I don't know how they determine that. So as we look at the next round of streets that need to be done and look at the poorest, the ones that are identified as poor, it's like I guess we're going to have to do more checking, maybe get more input from complaints from residents. You know, who's complaining the most? It means the streets are probably falling apart. And not just where are we going to do the next sewer job, or, you know, that can't be the governing factor always either.
That's one of the factors with the sewer. And again, yes, we use that, and also we have a list of all the people that complains, and we go check those streets and make sure that if they are in a conditions that needs to be repaired and so on, we put them on the list for the coming projects. So we do keep good track of any complaints that the city receives on that.
Did you include in your specs, since everyone's interested in crack sealing, typically before they overlay, they'll seal the cracks after they grind? So was that included in the
Yes, all the streets before. As a matter of fact, what we do is even after the grinding, that's when we do the crack sealing. So to make sure that even with the grinding, there's still some cracks is showing. So the crack sealing is done way before the paving.
Yeah.
That's in the
As
sense.
It should be. Okay.
Yes.
A lot of times I know RJ Noble tries to skip that.
No. Yeah. You know, it's
so you have to make sure.
And we
no, because
it.
I have first-hand yes. experience that they
yeah.
tried to skip that because yeah. they'll come back and say, oh, the hot mix leaves a hump.
No.
That's not going to be a smooth surface. We really don't want to do it, or we want to put down a cold mix instead of a hot mix to seal the cracks. They're going to come up with all of these excuses and try to switch
yeah.
out the materials, too.
Yeah.
So you really have to be on them to make sure that what you spec is what they actually
yes.
do, okay? And that way the product or the surface will last longer.
Yeah. That's why we have a full-time inspector to make sure that it's there.
Well, and full-time
yeah.
inspector needs to know what...
Right.
Right. It
oh,
can't
yes.
be a kid
I mean,
fresh
no, no.
out of school
no, no.
that's
I mean,
like just filling out the paperwork.
Correct.
I mean,
no.
I want somebody that's actually yeah. knows what he's doing. And because you're dealing with, these guys are pros at RJ Noble. They know
mm-hmm.
every which way to get out of.
Matter of fact, we made it clear in the pre-construction meeting that it is, on the crack ceiling and how we want it and so on. They need to blow the cracks, before and make sure that it is.
Now, did I hear that RJ lives in Villa Park?
Yes.
RJ
yes.
Noble?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
RJ lives?
Yes, he does.
Oh,
could we contact him and say, hey, look, we want a first-class job from you guys?
I would expect it since it's his own backyard.
Well, just
but
remind
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Reminder might be good.
I was thinking of Ben Aswell.
Yes, Gavin
Ben
Aswell's here. But
I don't know about RJ Noble.
I know. Yeah, I know Billy does. I've been
yeah,
in his house.
Yeah.
But.
I think he lives in San Clemente.
RJ Noble, I think
RJ
he has
does?
A number of residences.
He has a residence.
He has a number of residences.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
All right. I guess we covered three then.
Yes.
And four, we talked about the sewer update. Henderson storm drain. We already have a contractor on board. And they're also will be starting after the Labor Day. They have all their documentation and so on. They'll be starting some survey.
How long is that job?
That job is 60 working days. 60 working days. And
contractor?
It's Big Bend Construction.
Not related to Ben's hospital. We
Big Ben Construction.
That's somebody's phone.
And they are. That's what they're utilities contractors, so they're they do similar work.
And remind me, do we get a CM contractor on board for that too?
We do have a CM. Will be on the next city council meeting for award on that.
Who's recommended?
And it's recommended NV5.
NV5.
They were the only company.
They were the only bidder.
Bidder on that. And we will be working very closely with also the tenant or the owners of the property, and we'll make sure that to minimize the impact on them. They already provided the submittals for the pipes and all the other, some of the other materials that is being used. We're reviewing them to make sure that everything is according to the specs that in the bid documents. So they'll be, we'll be very busy by on Labor Day, after Labor Day. So we have three projects they're running at the same time, big project. So we just ask the residents to bear with us and everybody to bear with us because there'll be a lot of equipment in and out in from that area. Okay. That's regarding Henderson. Any questions on that?
Do you think you would get more bidders if MB5 was precluded from bidding on the construction management and inspection? Because typically, at least for I know for federal jobs, you cannot manage the construction or inspect it if you designed it.
Okay.
And if nobody's bidding on it, it's because you're the bidding on it. You know
MB5
I mean?
Was not the designer on the storm drain.
The storm drain. And on the sewer.
And the sewer was correct. The sewer was MB5. The street we got onward. You know, we tried, you know, it's
to do the engineer.
Yeah,
they're
we
doing
know who
the
onward is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And were they invited also to bid on the others?
We invited five different consultants.
Okay.
Five different consultants. And mainly onward is the one which is submitted for the streets. They've you know, they said they don't have the capability to do the stone drain. They don't have the staff, qualified staff for that.
Majdi said that.
Majdi yes.
said that.
Yeah, I got an email from him.
Surprised.
He said, you know, he said, sorry,
he never
we can't work.
Yeah.
Normally, Majdi does not, you know, reject any work, but
wow.
Majdi is the owner or the president of Onward Engineering.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other comments on the Nixon? On to the Cannon Wall update.
I think the last we left it, you were still going to go through some of the...
I've had a pretty busy past few weeks. Certain time of year of
things going on.
Special year, yeah.
The, if I can ask, can we do number 8? I kind of jump to that one because that's probably...
Let's bring Cannon back to next month's meeting then.
Yeah,
we'll
7 and 8
that.
If we could do both of those.
Yeah, so 7 and 8.
Well, 8. I'm going to pass out. This is Ackerman and I will put together the new school project at Villa Park High School. All right, the first page indicates the number of entrance points to the parking for traffic. There's 5, 6, 7 different entry points. That's just for a reference point so you kind of know where we are. The project, as described, is now this one, the multicolored one with arrows and things. So the big key point that they were going to do, and I think I mentioned this to everybody, is Taft Avenue. if you have the other second one, you see Taft Avenue above there. They were going to move all incoming traffic into the school grounds westbound, all the way down to Taft, closer to San Diego, if you'll see that was. And they came to us, and they've done traffic studies, and Akram and I said this is not acceptable because it's going to create a lot of difficulties. Excuse me. So it's going to back up Taft westbound, potentially all the way to Nichols Plus, and it will also have left turns in front of oncoming traffic, which the traffic study says anywhere from 7 to 10 cars per minute would be going eastbound. So these people would be making a left turn in front of unregulated turns there. So we were very uncomfortable. They evaluated all of our options and pretty much indicated, LSA indicated that all of that their proposal would work and that they feel that it successfully mitigates. So we are uncomfortable with it. We said that we would stand up. I've said, and I proposed to them last week, that the left turn access westbound be eliminated. If that's what you're going to do, we need to eliminate. You can't turn in front of traffic. It doesn't make sense. Unregulated with no lights or whatever.
That's no signal there?
No signal.
That's at the Smokewood.
Right.
This is Smokewood here.
Which is,
right.
Yeah. Signals at Nichols.
Yeah. But they're not proposing a signal here?
No.
No.
Oh.
No. So we were unwilling to accept that, and so I said, there's no left turn. You eliminate the left turn. Now the issue is, and you know, they were going to go back to LSA and say, does that work? Now the issue is what that will happen. Keep in mind that on both sides of Taft, it's a green drop-off area in front of the high school. The curbs are green. The other thing it would do is would force traffic, if you follow, they could go down center to San Diego, turn right, and they could drop off at 0.7 on the down here, you know, or go through whatever on that other map. So they can go through the back entrance, number 7 down there in the bottom, and come through, because that is an open entrance. So now there will be an impact on other traffic. So they are trying to push through a negative deck tonight, actually. So I've told them that I will intend to show up and indicate to them that this is not, you know, we believe that there are other mitigation issues they could have taken. But we are not, you know, so we're unhappy with this, and we don't feel this, you know, but we will close the left turn because it's Taft. We can control it. It's not their control. So it's under the city's control of the street. Such options, so you know, would be, for instance, moving the Science Center in the campus more away from Taft, which would allow a longer runway, say they could have gone that way. So they could have had an entrance point at Nichols with a light. So that was one of our suggestions. They are, you know, excluding that because of financial reasons or whatever they're doing. So I intend to have a letter from them indicating our problems, that we feel there are still impacts on the city and traffic. And so they're going to.
And young drivers that aren't experienced.
Turned in front of traffic oncoming.
That's huge. My kid wrecks all the time.
You're asking for accidents to happen, yeah. I think the mayor said. So the mayor actually had suggested that we blockade so there's no left. So on the aisle or something along that lane there, there'd be something so that it would not just be a signage, but physically. Actually something that physically prohibits.
Yeah, raise curb or whatever. Yeah.
Whatever we have to do. So anyway, so I'm sharing this with you because tonight the school board will be talking about this, and I will be expressing our concern that we've been working with them. We would propose alternatives. We do not feel that even with the removal of the left turn here, it is the best alternative that they could have chosen. And I think if they had worked with us and been more willing, we could have come up with a better option in the front end of it. The way it works, though, with the school district, as you're well aware, anything on school grounds, we can't control. It's all done by state architect, which is very frustrating because we could suggest all sorts of things. But I don't have that ability. So, long story short, being short, I wanted to advise you because I think you were asking, Dave, what was happening at the school.
Do we know if we can force them to install a signal at Smokewood?
I hate to see a signal so close to Nichols. There's already one.
Yeah,
there.
I think that was the concern. That talk
but they could be tied together.
Or they could be moved. You don't really need a signal at Nichols.
Well, I think Nichols, the reason there was a signal there was because of the crosswalk and there were some fatalities
30 years ago.
And I think that was installed there for that very reason. And it's a crosswalk, if you see.
Right, but you could do a mid block crossing with lights and all of that, and then move the signal down. But you're the expert.
Yeah, the distance between the Smokewood and Nichols is very short, and right now there is a heavy left turn movements from Taft into Nichols for the both the middle school and the elementary. So by also that left turn into the from Taft into the high school, Smokewood high school entrance, does not really provide enough storage for that left turn movements.
Even if there's a signal there, it wouldn't allow for that.
I mean, it's very tight, would be. The six cars per hour, you know, I mean, per minute, as we say, remember, you know, during the school, all that traffic is really concentrated in 15 minutes. So it's more than six cars per minute. It's going to be more because all of it is concentrated during that very short period of time. I mean, they realize that, but it's to them, it's, hey, it's not within their sight. So it's on public street, so they don't really care. Doesn't matter.
Seems like it ought to be configured to go to Nichols, where there's already a light.
That's what we suggested. We had suggested that there be a left turn lit. It's gold. You got a gold left. Yes. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
But the problem is, they're saying if you see those three cars, that they're saying the that's the distance they have. They can only get three cars in the queue, if they will. So they could not get enough cars, and it would obstruct. So they're arguing that, and their consultant said it is insufficient. The reason, again, this is, if you could move the science building back, you could have solved that problem.
Yeah.
But they moved the science center to obstruct, so you've lost the access point there. So if you look at the other map, we've lost, you've lost the room, if you will, to queue up cars.
I always like the entrance off of Santiago, where you're kind of away from the other.
That stays open. That will stay open. That will stay open. There, no. But what happens is, by removing the left turn access, we're going to actually, anybody coming westbound on Taft will have to go that way. We'll have to, out of necessity, go down there, unless they want to loop all around somehow.
Yeah, we'll detour a lot of traffic into Center and Lemon and Santiago in order to access it from the other side. Yeah.
So there will be an impact. There's no question. However, the other side, I mean, if there is a plus, is the westbound traffic on Taft will clear up considerably, you know, because you don't have anybody making left turns to worry about, you know, stopping in front of you.
Yeah.
So that should help if people are just exiting the city.
Now, what about exiting the parking lot at the end of the school day? That's a similar problem. Should it be right turn only or eastbound?
It is right turn only.
Okay.
Exit point one.
Exit number two.
And number four is exit both right and left.
Okay. Right, further down.
Yeah. At where is right and left?
Four. Number four, exit number four.
Four is right and left.
Oh, the staff parking.
No, next to the parking, the next one over.
The one next to the science, the new building.
So what's the reason for not moving the building back?
Financial.
Oh.
Financial?
So they basically,
if you look at, if you look at, it's not to scale, this is conceptually, but if you look at, like, in the middle there below that, what looks like a school bus, there's a building that's right here that would have to be, that would be, in this building would be impacted, would have to be demolished, or at least somehow addressed, because there would not be the ability. So in their master plan, this is, you know, one, we weren't involved in their master plan, so we don't have the specific details of when all not that that's going to be done or not done. But they're indicating that that can't physically be done without exorbitant fiscal costs. And so they're saying they don't, that they exclude. Now, we can't force them to do things. That would make the most sense. I agree with you. That's what we suggested. That was our very first suggestion, Akram, wasn't it?
Yep, that was originally make the main entrance right at the signal.
At Nichols
At Nichols, and also allow right turn and left turn. So right turn to go into the parking lot and, you know.
Entrance into school, right, left turn. So when you turn left, you can go either way. Yes. That's what the suggestion was.
But one of their also, in addition to the location of the science building, they don't want any of the parents or anybody dropping on the right side, which is if they made the right turn.
So this way will be
on that. They'll be crossing against the traffic, and they want all the drop off to be next to their building.
On the right hand side facing the school.
No, they could just make that path from the student parking over towards Nichols one way. Then there wouldn't be any drop-off.
It is one way.
So why are they concerned about...
Well, that was a suggestion when we talked. When Akram said if you make Nichols the entry point, you could go left into park. Because they said, well, we wouldn't have parking. How do you access student parking would be the issue.
Yeah.
So,
Is this going to the board?
Their school board tonight.
Well, so let them know that we did everything we could to try to work with them. And
I will be indicating in a love letter and we'll file, and we'll also verbally I'll be talking to them.
So we're going to be stuck with this probably.
Yes. Well, have with removal of this.
The community, there's a lot of people that
removal of this left. Well, the removal of this. Now, the interesting, the what they're
concerned. School-related traffic gets worse.
Yeah, it's going to get worse.
What they're saying is the only, these entrances, this exists.
My daughter's not there.
That exists.
Yeah, I know.
So on the eastbound traffic, it doesn't affect. There's no. It's the westbound traffic on Taft that the issue is.
Yes.
So the eastbound traffic exists. So there's no. So the people coming from outside the city have no issue. The people westbound.
Right. Everyone that's coming
this
way is going to be forced onto Santiago to drop them.
Or actually the Taft Avenue still has...
But they're changing this to a one-way this way?
Yes.
So...
Well, you'll still be able to... You'll be able to enter 7, I understand.
Enter 7.
Yeah. You'll still be able to enter down here.
There's that pinch point where those tennis courts are at 6.
Yeah, you're going to enter...
Enter 7, you can't drop off your kid. Because they're showing this right now.
There will be an exit. I understand. They can exit, but they have to come up and go through here and exit up here. So they have to come up and go over to here.
Yes, 7 is both ways, both directions.
So you'll be able to go up. So it's not just one. We're just showing the entrance from Taft is what they're showing here.
So they're going to demo one of the
tennis courts?
No.
The pinch is going
to
be...
They refuse to do that.
You can't get two-way traffic through there.
So you can't get two-way traffic through there. So basically, if I was taking my kids to school coming this way, I couldn't drop them off because there's no way in to the drop-off zone. Yeah, and I can't get through the tennis.
You would have to drop them right in that parking lot and leave.
I mean, you cannot drop them off in front of their class where their lockers
are.
That
is correct.
They're going to be forced to walk from the back of the school to the front of the school every day, including rain or shine. That's impossible.
Taft Avenue is still green on both sides.
The school, we can't control what goes on campus. The school has, the school can't control what goes on in the city. We're not,
it's not
up to us to solve their
problems. One of the things they indicated to us is because of security reasons, they're going to single entry points at most of these schools. So Canyon High School has now a single entry point, which is ridiculous when you think about it, but that's what they're doing for security control.
So for me, that would just double my commute to school then, if I was a kid, because now coming from my side of town, it means they have to go all the way out.
Or be dropped off on Taft, on Taft itself, which is a loading zone. There is green curbs on both sides of Taft.
And they have to cross the street.
At Nichols, which the light will still exist, so they can cross in the crosswalk.
Yeah. That's what we're doing
now, is another reason I don't want to move the light for there, because that's sort of an issue.
Yeah, but the kids,
this would have created, in our mind, this would create another Serrano Elementary by doing what they were proposing. It's unworkable. So,
all right, we got to get rolling here, or I got to leave at 9 either way.
Okay. Okay. Right. Well, I wanted to bring this. I think the mayor had asked, and I think you guys are asked for an update. This is where we are.
Yeah, interesting.
It's not exactly my idea of a.
So what time is the meeting today?
7:00.
We should go.
Yeah.
So they have the action to approve. They have the ability to approve a negative deck. they can do that. They can do that whether we protest or not. And then we actually can take action against that if they do, if we feel it's inappropriate or whatever. But, I mean, there's nothing we can physically do tonight to stop them from, if they're bent on doing it, except get our message to them. And that's all we can do. I mean, it's like anything. You can, they can approve an EIR if they want to, and we can't, we have to go back and litigate to say no. That's the reality. So we can express our concerns, so we'll go on record and make sure that we're represented. If you're there, wonderful. I appreciate it. It's at 7 o'clock, and it's item number 11, which is right after the, it's the first public hearing.
Okay.
So I don't know how their meetings go time-wise. I have no idea, but I'm assuming it'll go fairly quickly because...
Since we're a little short on time, would you support, do you want to discuss the management plan, infrastructure?
Oh, I was going to say 7 and 8, or 6 and 7, why don't we continue?
Yeah, continue. Let's table those to the next meeting.
And you could just pick a date for the next meeting, and then we're good. We can get out here by 9. Okay.
Thank you.
How's your answer, sir?
I'm good. Good, thanks.
What happened to the infrastructure?
That's what we wanted to talk about, the tour. I have not, you know, we've got 3 projects going. I have been, and Kelly, and then we had a little thing happening in November that's taking a little bit of my time to get everything going for. So my apologies, and the mayor's been actively engaged in that,
there's
too.
There's other important things.
What date are we looking for?
What date do you work on your calendars?
Oh. See, we're trying to do
public information?
Yeah.
It can be released?
Yeah, it's part of God's got to go into their night tonight. That's why I'm sharing with you. I mean, they've shared it with us. You're an agent of the city, so I'm not, you know, by advisory.
No, but if I post this, because there's a lot of people that are very active.
I can check. There's nothing. They provided us a copy of this stuff with no.
I'll check the board's minutes and their agenda online, and if it is, then
yeah, it might already be in there, but just pulled it out. I would assume they have to have something in there for documentation, right?
13th. Okay.
9/13, right?
September 13th.
7:30 work for everybody?
September 13th.
You're out of town, I believe, Mayor.
Just the League of Cities. I can.
Is that the night meeting or is that?
I'll just come here first thing and I'll go up there afterwards.
Okay, if you're good with that.
That's okay. All right.
The 13th. I'll send out a reminder to everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
So September 13th, next meeting. No further discussion or items? Anybody? We're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.